Welcome everyone to a very special interview today. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com, the free speech alternative to YouTube, where we get to discuss ideas that are censored everywhere else on the internet, it seems. And today we have a very special guest, first time guest for us. He's an expert in the rise and fall of civilizations. He has a ministry. His name is Fred Markert. He is a former atheist and a former communist who had a great awakening that he'll tell us about. He's traveled, I think, over 150 countries around the world and is a global strategist. He's presented information to Yale. He understands world history and how civilizations fail. We're gonna ask him some tough questions today about end times, Bible prophecy, the fall of civilizations, and whether or not we're seeing signs right now that our civilization, modern human civilization, might be on the precipice. So thank you, Fred, for joining us today. It's an honor to have you on. Welcome to the show.
It's great to be with you, Mike.
Well, I'm really excited to be able to talk with you. You come so highly recommended by people that we both know. But before we jump into the big questions, give us a little bit of a bio, a little background of how you came to be this so well known in your area of specialty. What's your background, please?
Well, Mike, I was raised in the Catholic Church myself and went to the like top Catholic intellectual institutions like college, prep, high school, Jesuits, run by the Jesuits in the Catholic Church, which are the intelligentsia, had a classical education, had to study Latin and Greek and a modern language in my high school years for 4 years, world history, the whole works. And towards the end of my high school years, it was the end of the Vietnam War, well, nearing that in America. And college deferments ended where if you were in college, you didn't get drafted to go to the war. I was in pre-med. I had become an atheist communist by this point, and my number came up in the lottery saying I had to go to Vietnam, and so I didn't want to do that. So I found a program where the U.S. government needed medical workers like myself with medical background. They sent me down to Baylor University. I finished up in microbiology, and I got to choose where in the world I could trade the time back to the government instead of going to Vietnam and shooting the North Vietnamese communists, who are my comrades, who I didn't want to shoot. And so I chose to go to Berlin, and I was the chief microbiologist in the U.S. government hospital in Berlin, Germany. And I chose that because it was 110 miles inside of communist East Germany. Wow. So I could easily get to all of my communist comrades with them for global communist revolution.
This is already fascinating. So you managed to get yourself stationed where you could be surrounded by communists because that's what you believed at the time.
Absolutely believed it was the only answer for the world. Of course, you know, Winston Churchill's famous quote, I was in my early 20s when Churchill said, anyone who's not a communist at age 20 has no heart. Anyone who's still a communist at age 40 has no brain. So I was in my heart phase where I'd lost all hope that there was a God or any other redeeming thing in the world other than communist revolution to set people free economically and in other ways. So I was pretty radical. I was a trained Marxist leader. I understand how you foment Marxist revolutions. So that makes me, I'm very alert to what's happening in America today. Wow. And it was in 1973 when a group of Christian missionaries came through Berlin, and I had a pretty dramatic encounter with them in Christ, and it turned me around. And from that point, I was really intrigued always with global geopolitics, history, understanding how to drive societies in a direction they should go, that I thought they should go. So this always interested me. And from that point forward, I combined both my faith with the study of the rise and fall of civilizations, international relations, and just became an expert in that. Did a lot of training. So
well, this is really fascinating. When you then see current events, Antifa leaders who are also trained militant Marxists in the streets using those tactics, for example, using Black Americans as the front line cannon fodder from their point of view, while the white radical communist Antifa leaders are, you know, behind them throwing Molotov cocktails and trying to get the police to shoot the Black people. You understand, like, that's a dynamic that you've seen before, I take it?
Absolutely. That's what we were trained to do and what I train people to do. All you need is a small percentage, you know, 2-3% of radical Marxist or, you know, people with any ideology, actually, who have very little scruples or moral ethics and are willing to use the thronging masses, and they are mostly unwitting to what your real goals are. Right. If you're willing to do that, then you can foment revolution. That's exactly what's happening in America today, is that the people behind the scenes in this whole movement to see Black lives really protected in ways that they feel they're not right now, or any other event like that, there's a small group that use that to accomplish their purposes, and about 90% of the people are clueless about how they're being used, to be honest.
That's definitely the case today. Well, you must also be familiar with the former Soviet intelligence officer who defected, Yuri, I think, Bezmianov. Bezmianov.
Yes. Yes.
Right. And
famous interview where he just went through and explained all the tactics.
Yeah, and he gave that, I think he gave this presentation in America in the late 80s, and it's all come true.
It's all come true, Mike, and anyone can just Google that, you know, and listen. It's fascinating. You hear it right from the horse's mouth. He accurately predicted what was coming, because this has been brewing actually since the 1930s in America, Mike. What really happened, there was a group of communists in Germany, in Frankfurt at the university. They became known as the Frankfurt School. And they recognized that communism didn't progress like Marx and everyone thought it would. They thought it would develop in the highly industrialized countries, like in America or Britain, and were absolutely shocked when it started in a third world country in Russia. And so their theories of economic Marxism were proven not to work. So the Frankfurt School in Germany said we must change to cultural Marxism. Instead of using economics to drive Marxism, we must use culture to drive Marxism because our economic theories didn't prove to work. And they developed a strategy and a plan for Marxist revolution. And as Hitler was coming to power, the Frankfurt School, Hitler did not like global communists, right? He was a national socialist, not a global socialist or communist. So he actually hated global communists, and they knew they had to flee. So they fled to America and were embraced at a prestigious American university in 1933, where over the next year, they developed what they called the Long March through the high places of the culture, where their plan for Marxist takeover of America meant first, we must gain influence over the universities and the educational system and TV and
pop
movies
culture, yeah.
And music in order to drive our agenda. And they called it a long march because they knew it would be 100 years or so to accomplish their goal. And so really this, what we're seeing today is just the fruit of something that began in America around 1933, 1934.
So it really brings up, I think, the question that's on everyone's mind. In your view, I mean, we all agree that this long march has been insanely successful at indoctrinating the population, twisting the minds of the youth where they now hate a constitutional republic, and they think they love communism, even though they've never lived under it yet. wait till that happens.
They will be the first to go. I mean, the history of communist revolutions are that you purge all those people who helped you bring it in because they're troublemakers. So they're going to have a big surprise.
But is it too late for America? This is my question. Is there precedent in history where nations have been able to beat this back and turn this around? Or are we already past the tipping point for this nation?
Well, Mike, I'll tell you, just from the a secular academic perspective, we are past the point of no return. There is no hope for America at this point. No, we're in a phase of our civilizational life called late decadence. No civilization in all of history has ever recovered from late decadence, okay? But there's more to it than that, too. Every preeminent civilization, those that rise to global power, superpower status like America, there's been 26 previous to us, and we're in 5,000 years of recorded history. The average lifespan of all of those superpowers from their six phases they go through, from outburst to decadence, that six phases happens over an average of 238 years.
Oh, we're
they
already
go from
beyond
outburst
that.
To collapse.
Yeah. Right.
And so America, we're 244 years old, so we're already 6 years past the expiration date. But some of them, I could just list some of them for your listeners and viewers.
Yeah, please, just name some.
The Assyrian Empire lasted 247 years. The Persian Empire lasted 208 years. The Greek Empire, 231 years. The Roman Empire, 207 years. The Arab Empire, 246 years. The Ottoman Empire, 250. The British Empire, 250. And USA, we're 244. So we're already past the average expiration date, and most analysts who are not what I would call revisionists, who revise history for their own goals, most analysts already believe there's no way to turn around America because we've rapidly gone through these six stages of our civilizational life. Okay, which I could list out if you think that would be interesting for everyone.
I do think, yeah, go ahead. Let's see the six stages.
Yeah, there's six stages that every superpower before us has gone through over 238-year average lifespan. The first stage is called outburst. That's when they first come on the scene and make their name. For us in America, that was 1776. We defeated the strongest empire at the height of its power to secure our independence. That was our outburst. The second stage after outburst is what's called conquest, when you first make your splash on the international scene. And our conquest stage was 1918 to 1945, when we were the decisive factor in winning World War I and World War II. Then after outburst and conquest, the next stage is called commerce, when you become internationally economically powerful. That started for us in 1945, since we were the only economy left standing that could supply goods and services to the world. The stage after outburst, conquest, commerce is called affluence. And our affluence stage started in about 1950. And because we became rich and affluent, because our basic needs were met, people started to buy homes. It was the growth of suburbia and home ownership and the American dream. Then after outburst, conquest, commerce, and affluence, you get to a stage called intellect, which for us started in 1965. And that's where your academics and universities and educational systems start to drift from your foundational principles. In fact, usually reject all your founding first principles, and they start to substitute a new understanding of your civilization that's totally revisionist and deconstructed. And that began in our universities in 1965, when most universities got rid of their Western civilization course. And we can talk about that more because that's something we need to restore. And then the last stage of the six, from outburst, conquest, commerce, affluence, intellect, we come to the decadence stage. And decadence is defined as the final stage in the life of a civilization, which is due to the decay and breakdown of religion, morality, education, justice, and unifying customs. And so we started our decadent stage in 1985, actually with a very, what seemed to many Americans to be a totally innocent program called the Golden Girls. Part of the Frankfurt School, part of their strategy in the long march through the high places of the culture was to take over television and Hollywood. And they said, we really must destroy three things. We must destroy the Bible, the church, and the family, right? Because those are foundational to Western civilization. And so they understood that if we can take over entertainment and especially get people laughing, when we laugh, it kind of opens up our mind and our soul to new thoughts and new ideas. So their goal was to get us laughing about immorality and laughing about things traditional Judeo-Christian ethic, about sex and everything else. So the Golden Girls was the first TV show that actually did that, had us laughing at these four elderly women who were lovable and endearing, but also were immoral in many ways. And that was the beginning of our decadence phase, which has continued since 85 to the present, especially with a rapid increase since 2014. So we're at the very final stage of civilization. No civilization has ever recovered from this point before this, Mike.
Okay, excellent mini presentation there. That's fantastic. It raises so many questions. Let me just start with some of the questions. So stage three, the commerce stage for the United States, it seems that one of the key strategies was the global dollar dominance that took place, the Bretton Woods agreements and the establishment of the petrodollar. So that was, I think that was quite unique in history. It allowed the United States to be able to export inflation globally, for us to enjoy the, let's say, the luxuries of debt while we push debt off to other nations that are forced to trade in our currency in order to buy and sell oil. Now, that, it seems to be, is now being threatened, may come to an end. China's talking about leaving the SWIFT banking system. The gold and silver prices have been spiking and have gone crazy lately. And with all of the Fed money printing now to the tune of, I think, almost $6 trillion this year alone, with trillions more yet to come, does it raise the question, or I'd like your analysis on this, how many more trillions away are we from the point where all the other partners in the world say dollars? Why would we want dollars?
Well, Mike, what you already shared was absolutely accurate. Gold prices are spiking because of an increasing concern about the stability of the dollar, right? So we really are coming close to the end of that system. This system only works as long as other countries are willing to loan us money. And that depends on their confidence in American stability. And our country is incredibly unstable in more ways than people understand right now. In fact, we're on the verge of what's called a cascading failure. When you have the failure in one of your systems, it triggers a failure in the next system, and the next one, and the next one, and cascading failures, as all of history shows, civilizational collapses happen in one day. Neil Ferguson, one of the top historians at Harvard and out at Stanford, talks about a civilization. It rises like on a bell curve, and it reaches the top, and then we think that it'll just have a glide path down, but that's not true. Instead, you rise and you peak, and then you fall off a cliff in one day, just like the collapse of the Berlin Wall in one day, November 9th, 1989, right?
Right.
So that's what's going to happen in America too. Our economy, we are already in trouble. And the only thing that makes me hesitate to say that we're going to see a total collapse of the system soon is that politicians have been incredibly ingenious in finding new ways to kick the can down the road. So it may be that they come up with some ingenious plan to kick the can down the road right now, but that's all it will be, is kicking the can down the road. Voltaire said, all fiat money, or all printed money, all fiat money reverts to its full value over time.
Which is zero. Yeah, exactly.
And that's exactly right. So we're headed there. Well, the question is when. If we don't see a turnaround, and I do think there's a way that maybe we can dodge this bullet, if we don't dodge the bullet and we don't see some turnaround soon, I think our economy is not headed for a soft landing. In fact, many of the global economists are predicting at best a massive global recession and at worst a global depression, probably worse than the Great Depression. But we'll see what happens. Politicians can be very crafty.
If we use logic and reason and we understand the structure of complex societies, then I think there's no way that we can avoid a catastrophic collapse. In fact, I read that book many years ago, Joseph Tainter. I think it's called The Structure of Complex Civilizations.
Well, the Collapse of Complex Societies.
The Collapse of Complex Societies, that's it, yes.
Tainter, it's the classic.
Right, and then also books by Jared Diamond, for example, Guns, Germs, and Steel, and so on. And what all these have in common, and I think what parallels what you're talking about, is when you have highly complex societies that have specialization of talent and resources, you lose the ability to suffer a mild collapse. For example, a theoretical physicist doesn't know how to grow food. And a theoretical physicist can't, in one day, trade in their academic physics knowledge for an ability to grow potatoes. They physically can't do it, even if they had the knowledge. So there is not a simple, gradual decentralization of specialization. It's quantized from highly complex to agrarian collapse. You know what I mean?
Right. Exactly right, Mike. And that actually started at the very end of World War II, right? When our experts developed the nuclear bomb, right? The atomic bomb, which we used to stop the war, right? That began the American fascination with experts, and then the drive to get people to become experts, siloed in their knowledge, which is really a problematic way to structure your society. And yeah. Now those elites actually control our educational institutions, our government institutions, our media, right? And you just nailed it. The weakness in that is that they know very little out of their silo, and we've deprecated or denigrated, they call all the agrarian and other, the trades, they call that flyover country or the deplorables or whatever. So right. They actually sneer at people rather than embrace those people. Like Germany, you know, Mike, in most societies of the world, only about 30 to 33% of people ever get a degree. And what we've done is, because of our emphasis on expert and gaining expertise, we drive everyone to college to get a degree. It now takes, on average, the average person 6 years to get a four-year degree because they find it difficult to go through, and about 56% drop out and never get a degree, right? It's because we're driving people to get degrees who really are not the best candidates for that, right? Well, you know what they do in Germany? 59%, they recognize this in Europe, you know, as the majority of people aren't going to get a degree. So they have trade schools, and 59% of people in Germany go to trade school instead of college. They're yes. welders, plumbers, electricians who make so much money. They do better than our college graduates, actually. Well, so we have a very sick educational system because of our reliance on these experts.
Exactly. You really nailed it. And I'd just like to add to that, we have now this virtualization of skill sets into abstract areas that have no relationship to reality. And on a practical level, we've seen this. For example, we hire people in our warehouse and food manufacturing and fulfillment operation. We have had the most difficult time imaginable hiring young entry-level workers who can work with their hands. Everyone is now in abstract worlds of Snapchat and social media, and they're experts in those realms. Everybody wants to be a YouTube personality. We literally, the other day, we had to teach a person how to plug in a USB thumb drive into a USB port. I'm not even exaggerating.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing. I'm laughing because it's
true.
I understand. But do the same. I mentor lots of young leaders.
Well,
and
it's even
the very basic skills just that I have to mentor them in just astounds me.
It's truly astonishing. And believe it or not, this person forgot how to do it, and we had to reteach this person the next day. Because the idea of using your hands to do something is now foreign. It's alien to much of our generation. Whereas you mentioned in Germany, people go to trade schools. You learn welding. You learn mechanical skills, hands-on skills, not academia where you're studying a bizarre abstract subject such as women's studies. You know, you're studying feminism, which is it's an abstract made-up topic, or you're studying how to be a victim instead of studying something in the real world. And I remember saying to my wife the other day, this society will fail just because of what I see in the hiring. People don't know how to use their hands. When I was a kid, we played in the sandbox. You built little army forts with your hands. You dug with a stick, you know. You made snowmen with snow.
Right, absolutely,
Mike. Not anymore.
And to compound it, just which is going to feed our cascading failure, most of the people in universities and colleges are not going into the STEM fields, science, technology, engineering, and math, right? They're going into the soft sciences, like you said. I mean, there's even now, I mean, in an extreme case, feminist glaciology, right? Feminist mathematics. That's the intellect phase that we talked about earlier, when your academics basically strain at gnats but swallow camels, to put it in biblical terms. And you know what? We have, 76% of our infrastructure is at D-, is really in decay.
Yes.
And what do you need to rebuild your infrastructure? You need three things:
engineers,
reading, science, math. Right?
Yeah.
Because those produce engineers. Why do we import so many Eastern Indian and Chinese engineers? Is because we're not producing our own.
That's right.
You know what? China is number one in the world in reading, science, math. You used to be USA was number of the world in reading, science, and math. Right now, we're 17th in the world in reading. We're 27th in science and 37th in math. Those are the three skills you need to rebuild a complex society or even to maintain it. And we don't even have the raw material to maintain our complex society. It's like a historian, Thomas Cahill, once said about the people after the collapse of Rome. They were living amongst the ruins. They looked at the aqueducts delivering. You know, Rome delivered 200 gallons per day per citizen of fresh water. That's more than we even deliver. And so they watched the aqueducts crumbling, and the people had lost the ability to understand how to repair them or even how to rebuild them, see? And so we went into the Dark Ages living amongst the ruins. So we are in very bad shape.
The human knowledge that was lost, I remember reading, you know, because I'm a lab scientist as well, and always interested in elemental chemistry. And I remember that the aqueducts were constructed using a special type of concrete where they use ocean water as the water, not rainwater, but ocean water, because it has a certain mineral matrix, high in magnesium, for example, created a very, very strong bond that wasn't possible with freshwater sources. And the Romans knew that. And yet today, I guarantee you, if I said that to 100 scientists who are modern day engineers, none of them would know that.
Right, they don't know that. In fact, yeah, they don't know so much. We've lost the understanding of antiquity. We've lost our roots. We've abandoned Western civilization and all of our roots. It used to be you'd go to college and we would refresh the roots of our civilization with every new generation. They would read, to be honest, the whole modern world and Western civilization came from a combination of Roman, in the crucible of Rome, you had a mixture of Roman politics, Greek philosophy, and Christianity in the crucible of Rome produced the modern world. In fact, Christianity enlivened the correct ideas in Roman politics and Greek philosophy. It gave life to them, and that sparked the greatest civilization the world has ever seen. You used to read Plato, you used to read Aristotle, we used to read Shakespeare, which were all morality plays, right? Right. We used to read all the great works, the foundational documents, and every new generation of Americans would wrestle with the ideas for themselves, make those ideas their own, and because they were their own, we were able to replenish our institutions, yep. Right? But now we don't teach any of these foundational documents. We're no longer watering the roots of our civilization, which was the Marxist strategy, so that they're able to deconstruct our civilization and build a new one. Except the new one will be a dystopia, and it's not so easy to rebuild after a catastrophic cascading collapse.
That's right. Human knowledge will be lost, and morality, and so on. But it's the attacks on the foundations of civilization have now increased to the point where progressives even say that college entrance exams themselves are racist, that having an intellect is racist, that citing Plato is racist because they say Plato was a white philosopher. No, today he'd be considered an immigrant if he moved to the United States. But the very foundations, the pillars of civilization are now called racist or sexist or what have you, where to the point all that the radical left wants remaining in society, it seems, is a bunch of self-traumatized, psychologically damaged, physically, sexually maimed LGBT children who don't even recognize logic and reason and have no ability to think critically whatsoever and have no idea of their history, where they came from. That's what they want, it seems.
Oh, that's absolutely right, Mike. And they want people just barely smart enough to be able to do Microsoft Word and run spreadsheets to keep the machinery going of civilization, but not have any critical reasoning abilities. In fact, that's one of the main signs of decadence. If you just go through the list of decadent societies, that is one of the main signs, but it just shows where we're at, right? I've collected these from about 400 books on the rise and fall of civilizations. Decadence is the rejection of both classical and Judeo-Christian values and the replacement with hyper-individualism and moral relativity. Boy, wow. We are there. Decadence is the growing predominance of unrestricted individualism while regressively doing away with unity, objectivity, critical thinking, respect for authority, and the rejection of the tyranny of tradition, right? Which you were just talking about, getting rid of Plato and the founding documents.
And no church services allowed.
Exactly right. Another sign of decadence is hypersexuality without producing nuclear families or having babies. We have a demographic crisis in America. Our population is only growing because of the illegal immigrants in America, because our society has rejected only actually, this is true throughout history, and secular and historians say this, religious societies reproduce. Non-religious societies do not reproduce, because religious societies have a hope for a future that's better, whereas secular societies just look at the dystopian future coming and say, why should we bring babies into that, right? So I could go down and down the list. Oh, here's one that's killing us, Mike. In decadence, creativity becomes microscopically innovative and macroscopically a failure. So this, let's just talk about cell phones. We all have them, we all use them, right? Do you know Bill Gates and Steve Jobs? Totally different ideas about computing and computer science, Apple and Microsoft, right? They did agree with one thing. Neither of them let their children use tablets or smartphones because they understood how destructive they are to young minds, actually to all minds. In fact, last year, Mike, they had to add 5 new brain disorders to the scientific manuals of brain disorders, all having to do with addiction to screens. 5 new ones, wow. Right? So there's books about this called The Shallows, right? That because young people are just doing 140 character tweets and everything, in key development times when synapses in your brain are connecting, you know, when you need to be studying geometry, it's challenging logic, right? Challenging so that your synapses form. Instead, those are not forming. So people are losing the ability to think and analyze deeply. Another sign of decadence is the deconstructing of foundational principles and reducing the revisionist ideas to trite phrases. Things like no person is illegal, or we are a nation of immigrants. Well, yes, we're a nation of legal immigrants. You could say we are a nation built on Judeo-Christian immigrants, because all immigration up until like the mid-60s was mostly from the same Western civilization. So we had a homogeneous foundation, right? And it was in the 60s that immigration was deliberately changed in order to accentuate non-Judeo-Christian-based societies in order to destroy that foundation, right? So if you just say, you know, we're a nation of immigrants, it just totally obscures the fact that, yes, we're immigrants, but we all had the same civilizational foundation, which current immigrants don't. In fact, right. There's a truth I don't like, but it's true. Right? Samuel Huntington, who is the head of international studies at Harvard, he died in the late 2000s. His last book was a book called Who Are We? And he is not a conservative. He was on the left politically, not a Christian believer. But in his book, Who Are We? He said, we must ask ourselves this question as America. This is the most important question for us going forward. Who are we? He said, we must answer, we are Protestant Christian. He said, because America was founded on the Protestant Christian ethic. Whether someone was a Protestant Christian or not, the whole society operated on Protestant Christian ethical values. If a man will not work, neither let him eat, right? And others. And so what Huntington said, he said, I'm going to be called a racist. I'm not. He said, the two things that will destroy idea are the idea of multiculturalism and the idea of, oh, dear Lord, I forgot. This is my 4th Zoom interview for the day. Political correctness, multiculturalism and political correctness. He said, it is insane to say that all cultures equally produce healthy civilizations. They do not. And if you even dare to say that all cultures that some cultures do not produce healthy civilization and other cultures do. So if you dare to say it, you're called a racist because of political correctness. And then he analyzed, he said, our challenge in America is we have two waves of all of our previous waves of immigrants assimilated the Judeo-Christian ethic in our schools, in our movies, in our entertainment. Even if they did not convert in any way to Christianity, they assimilated these values from our culture. He said, but now we've stripped those values out of our culture, number one. And number two, the two biggest waves, the Hispanic and the Muslim immigration, neither of them are assimilating like previous waves of immigrants did. And he said, I'm all for immigrants coming. I'm not a racist. He said, I just want them to assimilate our foundational values. And he showed that actually Catholic Christian cultures are less developed than Protestant Christian cultures, like in Europe. He shows in Southern Europe, which is more Catholic and Orthodox, their level of education and everything is lower. He attributes that, as a non-believer, he attributes it to them not adhering to the Bible as closely as Protestants do. And the Protestant countries that adhere to the Bible more closely rose to greater levels of development. So the problem with Hispanic immigration that's not assimilating, even though they are Christian-based, they're Catholic, they don't have the brand of Christianity that leads to higher levels of development. And with the Muslim immigration, they don't adhere to biblical principles at all. And actually, Islam over time, not immediately, but over time, actually imposes a 7th century Arabic civilization on top of whatever society they move to. So he said, those are our problems and we have to address that. Now, I'm all for Hispanics and Muslims and everyone else immigrating. I just want them to assimilate our foundational values while maintaining their cultural distinctives in their own communities.
Well said. I've got so many questions for you. It's clear we're not even going to have time to cover them all, but let me give out a website that you're involved with here, theisaacnewtonproject.com. Again, theisaacnewtonproject.com. Can you offer us a quick description of that? And then let's move on to some other questions I've got for you.
Yeah, well, Mike, what that is right now, it's a site where we've pulled together a lot of Christian ministries who are providing resources for people who are locked up, a lot of them locked up during COVID, the corona apocalypse, I call it. and they're at home, and there's ways they can better themselves. There's everything on there from helps to improve your marriage. Marriages are going through strain and tension at this time. Ministries that help you with your finances to be better financial planners, et cetera. Ministries that help pornography, I think, is a big problem. It's not a victimless crime, so to speak. Pornography, actually, the American Association of Divorce Lawyers say 50% of divorces in America are directly related to porn. The wife will no longer put up with it. And so the breakdown of the nuclear family, so there are resources to get free from porn. There's also, at the bottom of the page there is a place someone can give us their email address if they want to know the answer to the problems in America. I believe we do have a hope to come out of our nosedive, but we have to get back to our Judeo-Christian roots, to be honest. Right. And if they want more information, they can put their email in there. We'll send them more information. There's also links that people can click on if they just want prayer. The Billy Graham Association is willing to pray for people in this dark time in our society if they just are feeling a need for some spiritual help. So the IsaacNewtonProject.com has all those resources.
Okay, that's great. And I know that when the lockdowns first happened, I remember one of the big announcements in pop culture was that the a porn site said they were going to have free porn for everybody. I just I remember seeing that thinking, is it really, is this what our country has come to, where people are staying at home when they should be told, take zinc and vitamin D and we'll all be fine, or
Absolutely.
Most of us. And we should be told we have to get back to work. We have to have socialization of children in schools. Otherwise, they're going to be brain damaged even more than they are now, or they're going to be socially, and I don't mean this in a demeaning way, but socially retarded. In other words, retarded in their social development. But instead, they're staying at home watching porn, collecting unemployment benefits from the government that have exceeded what they would earn working an entry-level job. And I'm thinking, how is this a recovery? How is this an economy? This is the end of civilization. I remember saying that out loud. This is the end of civilization. It cannot proceed. You can't print fake money to pay people not to work, to sit at home masturbating to free porn. That's not an economy.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a dead end in every way. I mean, we could talk about this for quite some time, but that's one of the most destructive things you can do, actually, to sit around watching porn of any kind, right? It just shows, Mike, that in every way, our society is sick. We're at the end of our life cycle. Nothing is healthy. We weren't able to even, as the prominent country in the world in almost every regard, we were not able to respond to the COVID crisis in a way that hasn't actually planted the seeds of our destruction, to be honest.
Right.
I think so much, honestly, was mismanaged. You know, I think people, if they were given basic health information that was not made available to the public, some of it fought against, you know, and had we protected the vulnerable instead of trying to lock up the people who aren't vulnerable. I mean, there's so many things we did wrong. Yeah. That's the sign of an unhealthy society that's on
also,
the verge of collapse. It cannot address its challenges.
But I have to add to that, you know, we should have learned much of this in the first 30 days. So even if we did a precautionary lockdown in mid-March, within 4 weeks, a lot of information was already known. We should have learned from that and adapted. For example, we knew very early that hydroxychloroquine could be used as a prevention measure and that it worked and that it was very safe when combined with zinc. It was highly effective. And yet that was censored. It's not just that we made mistakes as a society. It then became politicized to the point where the lockdowns, I believe, were weaponized as a weapon against America to deliberately seek to destroy the mental health of the American people, to destroy the economy, and to, of course, try to destroy President Trump as well. But the level of viciousness by those who oppose the founding principles of America, and I'm talking about people like Governor Newsom of California and various mayors and governors and mostly left-leaning, you know, senators and so on, the level of maliciousness has gone way beyond mistakes. It has become, in my opinion, crimes against humanity. I don't see any other way to describe it.
Oh, absolutely, Mike. When I was a Marxist, and I used to train you in Marxist leaders, we would train them, take advantage of these naturally occurring situations, right? You use every situation, or like someone in the Obama administration said, never let a good crisis go to waste. You just use that crisis. You exacerbate it, you make it worse on purpose because you're trying to deconstruct the society
right.
so that you can reconstruct it in the way you see fit. And I believe that's exactly what's happened, is that it has been weaponized for the purpose of deconstructing our society. In fact, Mike, there's a great book called The Storm Before the Calm by George Friedman, one of our top geopolitical analysts here in America. He talks about we have two cycles that are hitting their lowest point in America between 2020 and 2025. And it's the first time these cycles have ever collided at their low point at the same time. That's the institutional cycle, where all your institutions don't work anymore. Your universities aren't working, your politics isn't working, your economics isn't working well, and also your socioeconomic cycle and your institutional cycle. The institutional cycle, your institutions in America, they change radically every 80 years, and the socioeconomic foundation changes every 50 years. And this is the first time when they're both due to change within the next 5 years together ever in our history. And so what's around us are the Marxists and others who understand that institutional and socioeconomics are going to radically change. They have weaponized this, made it worse in order to deconstruct, bring an end to what has been in order to institute the new economic order and the new institutional order.
It's extraordinary. And we're coming up on time. I want to be very respectful of your time. I know you've done many interviews today, and I greatly appreciate you spending time with us. I just beg of you, let me ask you one more big realm of questions here. And you can answer it in wherever direction you want to go, but what does the collapse look like? What are people living today going to experience as this collapse of our Western civilization unfolds in America? And like I know you already said here, sometimes it can happen overnight. You know, the fall of the Berlin Wall, the collapse of the Soviet Union, and so on. Other times it is torturous, like Venezuela.
Right.
Torturous 10 years of starvation and violence. What are we likely to experience?
I'll just tell you my opinion. Different analysts and futurists have different ideas of how it'll go, Mike. But apart from a turnaround, I do believe it's possible to have a turnaround. It will mean we have to get back to our Judeo-Christian ethics. And so that means a spiritual renewal in our country. Apart from that, we know that, so let me just lay a quick foundation. Right now, we have a problem with the breakdown of the nuclear family. 42% of children in Caucasian homes are raised in a single-parent household. 73% of African Americans raised in a single-parent household. When young men are raised in a single-parent household, they become angry. We know this psychologically. When young women are raised in a single-parent household, they become sexually promiscuous. These two things are accelerating in our society, leading to a societal weakness, an emotional weakness, a societal weakness. The rage we're seeing in our streets and the rate of unwed pregnancies just show how far we're breaking down and how far we've lost our ability to emotionally live in a way that's productive for society. And so I think what's going to happen is we'll have some failure, like a financial crisis. 2008 was just the foreshock of the earthquake that's coming. And look at what that did, right? Think of the hurricanes that have hit and the breakdown of society, the looting, the rioting, the people just becoming barbaric, right? So I think that's what we're going to see. We're going to see probably a financial crisis again. And that's going to lead to all this pent-up anger and rioting, looting. That will lead to cascading failures of transportation systems, of the electrical grid, et cetera, et cetera. So I think we won't be like a Venezuela we won't be like one of those with a long, slow decline. I think because we're so dependent on all of our systems, and we're so unable to live without those, without electricity, without running water, without food showing up in the supermarket, I think our society will tear itself apart very quickly. And history shows what happens. All the enemies who know they cannot take us down while we're strong are going to see this opportunity to take down America, right? Because the real battle in the world is between autocracies and democracies. That's what's happening. China, Russia, Iran, North Korea, the main dictatorships, autocracies, are trying to gain control of the global system. And if they see this weakness develop, they will flood in like all previous civilizations like ours in history, they're going to take the opportunity to overrun us. I think that's why the way it's going to go for us personally.
Well, that raises a couple of questions, if you don't mind me with a follow-up here. So because of the interdependence of international banking right now, it seems likely, and I've studied this quite in depth, that a financial crisis in the U.S. dollar and in Western central banks will ripple throughout most of the world, not Russia, though. Russia has isolated itself fiscally from much of Western banking. China may be in the process of that, but they haven't achieved it yet. Iran, of course, is completely isolated. But it seems to me that a financial crisis in the U.S. does two major things. Number one, it does ripple around the world. China is on the verge of its own debt crisis separate from the United States. And if that Three Gorges Dam fails, then China may collapse into something we've never seen before. But secondly, I don't see how food production persists in the aftermath of a global banking crisis or debt collapse, because farming depends on fuel, and fuel depends on a transactional infrastructure that depends on functioning banking systems and faith in some type of currency. That ripple effect, I think, goes into the food pipelines very quickly. And in no time, the people who live in cities will be facing famine. Within weeks.
Absolutely, Mike. I think you're reading that accurately. That's why it'll be a catastrophic cascading failure. And all the enemies of the U.S., the declared enemies, which are mainly China, Russia, Iran, North Korea, they will take advantage of that. Their goal is to redo the global international order that was put in place at Bretton Woods, which we call a liberal democratic world order. They want to replace it with an autocratic world order. And history shows what they do. When the superpower becomes weak, they see it as their only opportunity to strike, and they do. They're brutal. And in all of history, it's like Rome with Carthage. They salted the earth of Carthage so they could never rebuild, because they wanted to make sure that they rose, that Rome rose, and Carthage could never challenge them again. Well, so the only one of the 26 superpowers before us that were not decimated by all the other powers when they got to their collapse stage was Britain. And the only reason Britain was not decimated is because Britain's sun rose to global power, and we extended an umbrella of protection over Britain and the former British Empire. There's no one to extend an umbrella of protection over America, and our enemies will see it. This is our one chance to come after America. So we're actually in a dire situation. I actually have hope. If we can have a spiritual renewal, a return to our Judeo-Christian foundations, I think we can turn this around. That's a big job, but I believe it's possible. Well, as things get dark in society, hopefully people will start to think more in spiritual terms.
This is the time for revival, and I agree with you. I think that a church revival is the only pathway for humanity to survive the demons of destruction that humanity has unleashed. And yet it seems like only in the darkest hour throughout history have people come to God and embrace the church, and often too late, because they allowed their churches to be overrun by antichrist elements. Even today, our churches today are promoting LGBT. They're okay with abortion. They're marching with Black Lives Matter terrorist groups that are burning down buildings instead of actually protecting Black lives. So our churches, many of our popular churches today, have already surrendered to evil.
Right. Well, Mike, there's a scripture that really gives me hope. It's Jeremiah 18, verses 7 through 10. It says, God says, if at any time, so it's a blanket statement for all of time, if at any time a nation, so it's a blanket statement, any nation, if at any time a nation upon whom I've declared judgment repents from its evil and turns back to me, then I will relent of the judgment I declared on that nation. He says, if at another time I declare good on a nation and that nation turns from me, then I will bring judgment on that nation, which I previously declared good tidings on, right? So I have a hope if we could, enough of us can repent of our sins, our selfishness, and get back to faith in Christ and our Judeo-Christian ethics, I believe we can see, I think God will turn our country around. I believe it. That's possible. In fact, I'm working on a project called the Great Awakening Project. We don't have a website up yet, but if people go to the isaacnewtonproject.com and give us their email address, we can send you information. We're working to see a revival in America that will potentially save our country. So I think that's our only hope at this point.
I completely agree with you. I am all in for your project. I feel called to do this. There's nothing more important right now. I mean, we will lose our civilization.
Important. Right.
Let's talk after this interview, you know, later on after you get a chance to rest your voice. I know you've done a lot of talking today. Let's talk about the Great Awakening Project and how we can help promote that and spread the word, because we're going to have to reach some kind of critical mass of Americans repenting against abortion, murder, and transgenderism, maiming of children, and all these things. It's going to take a lot of people. I don't know what percentage, you know, God has in mind, but it can't just be 2% of the country. You know, we're going to have to get
exactly
more people.
Right, Mike. It's not defined in the Bible. God doesn't say what percent. We know when Abraham was negotiating with God, if I can find 10 people who are righteous, will you spare this city? And God said, yes, if you can find 10, I'll spare it. And of course, Abraham could not find the 10. So we don't know the percentage, which means we need to just pull out the stops and go all out for this.
Yes.
In fact, it's so bad, Mike, I'll just tell you, Camille Paglia, who's an academic at an Ivy League school on the East Coast. She's a self-acknowledged atheist, feminist, lesbian, transgender, right? She made her global academic fame a book in 93 called Sexual Personae, where she identified the very last sign before the imminent collapse of every civilization in history. And the very last sign is the acceptance of transgenderism.
Wow.
The very next thing is your imminent collapse. Camille is speaking out in conservative circles. Even though she's a woman of the left, she's detested by the left right now. The right is saying, come talk to us. In fact, she, as an atheist, feminist, lesbian, transgender, she is calling for religion to be taught in our public schools. She said, without a reinjection of morality, we have no hope for our civilization. So even secular scholars are coming to the same conclusion, Mike.
Well, that's extraordinary. I couldn't agree with you more. Look, I just want to thank you for taking the time today, and I really hope that we can have the opportunity to speak with you again about these important topics. Your knowledge is critical for our time, and I want to encourage readers to visit your website right now, the isaacnewtonproject.com, and to stay informed about your upcoming project, the Awakening Project, or the Great Awakening Project. So thank you so much, Fred. It's been an honor speaking with you.
It's been great to be with you, Mike. Thanks for the opportunity.
All right, thank you.
This video was made possible by Brighteon.com. After being deplatformed by YouTube, I built Brighteon.com so that we can speak. All voices of dissent are welcome. Join Brighteon.com now, post your videos today, and start building an audience there where you will not be censored. Brighteon.com.